Blog Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Linda Amerson from Texas, the owner of LA's Hair and Scalp Clinic. I am giving a shout out to Carrie,
the Queen Chief of College of New Orleans, Louisiana. I just want to give a shout out to the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hyde and his new team this morning.
Yay! All right. So in the morning, what do you do each day?
I listen to the Hair Radio Show, baby.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines.
Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Carrie Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carapi Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
fighting, cause the winner don't quit on themselves. Hail Marys, I meditate for practice. Channel 9 News tell me I'm moving backwards. 8 blacks left, deaf is around the corner. 7 misleading statements about my persona. 6 headlights waving in my direction. 5-0 asking me what's in my possession. Yeah, I keep running, jumping the aqua, there's fire hydrants and hazardous smoke alarms on the back of us. For mama, don't cry for me, ride for me, drive for me, live for me, breathe for me, sing for me, honestly guiding me. I can be more than I gotta be, stole from me, lied to me, nation hypocrisy, code on me, driving me wicked, my spirit inspired me like, yeah. Open correctional gates in high deserts. Yeah. Open our mind as we cast away oppression. Open the streets and watch our beliefs, and when they carve my name inside the concrete, I pray it for every
freedom, freedom, I can't move. Freedom, cut me loose.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Terry Hines. Stay tuned.
As women, it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders, and that weight is directly balanced between your two feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women, and Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com, providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
I'm Maggie Anderson. I am the creator of the Empowerment Experiment and the author of Our Black Year, my family's year-long stand completely living off of black-owned businesses. When we decided to take on this public pledge, we had no idea how hard it would be. There was only one black-owned grocery store in all of Illinois. And that grocery store closed 5 months before we finished our year. And I have two little girls. There means no fresh milk, no fresh meats, no fresh produce. But I put them through that because we took the stand and we wanted really to do something extreme out of love for our community, to expose how few black businesses there still are, to refute negative stereotypes about black-owned businesses, and to expose economic injustice that still persists in America. After the year, I decided that I could not go back to corporate. I could not go back to law. I've made this issue of economic racism and really trying to create economic empowerment in our black community my life. The black hair care firms, they sustained the civil rights movement. Black women created these companies, huge, thriving companies, and we needed that. We talk about Black Wall Street now because we shine a light on what happened in Tulsa. Most black neighborhoods were anchored by these Black Wall Streets, and if we could bring that back, America would be better. I'm not saying bring all of it back. That would probably be impossible, but we can bring black hair care back. There are great black hair care companies that exist, black-owned hair care companies that exist right now. And it would be wonderful For in America, just like other groups own their culturally relevant products and industries, that the black community can own the biggest black hair care brands, that the black community can own black beauty supply stores. 3% of the beauty supply stores in black neighborhoods, and black people know what I'm talking about. If you go into a black neighborhood, you're going to see a beauty supply store, and they're going to sell all the black hair care products that only black people use, and they are not owned by black people. So I've issued the Black-Owned Hair Care Challenge, just asking everyday folks to say, "Hi, my name is Maggie Anderson, and I accept the Black-Owned Hair Care Challenge," and tell the world that from now on, if I'm going to buy black hair care products, I'm going to make sure it's from a black-owned company.
Hi, I'm Jossie from Jossie's All Natural. Have you been struggling with keeping your natural hair healthy or desire to achieve substantial hair growth? Then Jossie's All Natural is here to help you. My natural creams, conditioners, lotions, hair mists, balms, shampoos, and detanglers are gentle enough for the whole family and all hair types. Not only do I provide natural hair products, I also give step-by-step techniques to ensure healthy hair in a pure and gentle fashion, from roots to ends. Come on and visit me at www.jossiesallnatural.com. That's JossiesAllNaturale.com for a true natural hair experience like you've never had before.
And we're back. I'm Kerry Hines, and on this Tuesday morning, December 7th of 2021, in the first hour, we have something totally new for the very first time on this broadcast. And we're talking about business today at the salon. It's really about creating a mission statement and talking about the necessity and why it's so critical. And a critical part of your operation, especially when you're just getting it off the ground. So here's taking a look at how to create the perfect mission statement and why it is so necessary. All right. So in first taking a look at your business, when you begin to lay out your business, and again, you can pick up my book, How to Get Rich in the Hair Business. I really outline a great deal of this, but we're going to talk about it today. So save a few dollars and just pay close attention. I think you'll be just fine. So I'm also using a source which I absolutely love. It's a big, big book called Ready, Set, Go. And Jeff Gristler and Eric Ryant wrote this book, and it really kind of really nailed it for me. And here's what he says about your mission statement. Leadership is based on spiritual quality, the power to inspire, the power to inspire others to follow. That's by Vince Lombardi. And he begins this chapter by saying, what is a mission statement? Why do you need one? How does it help? What is the purpose? A mission statement tells something about who you are, what your business represents, and your reason for being in business. A mission statement is a short, written statement of the purpose of a company or organization. The mission statement should guide the actions of the organization, spell out its overall goal, and guide decision-making. For example, the mission statement for the book that I'm literally quoting from says, to help aspiring salon owners and business owners develop and achieve their dream of owning a successful business. So that's a great mission statement. And with that being said, they had the writers of this particular book that we are using as our source today, in terms of really laying it out in terms of what to do with creating and crafting your mission statement. Now for me, and at Hair Radio, this is what I say. I believe a mission statement and your core principles, these are things that you cannot operate without. Lay down, first of all, the first thing I did when I decided to create a mission statement, and I have written my mission statement out many years ago, but what I first took a look at, what, as this gentleman pointed out in the book, what does it mean to me? What am I trying to accomplish? And I literally just put a pen and to paper and said, what was my ultimate goal? And that goal, its purpose that I set out was to assist folks with promoting themselves through the hair and beauty industry. And that's how I initially began this business. So my mission statement needed to reflect that so I could evaluate with each interaction the success or if I didn't hit the mark. So that was the key. I also went about creating core principles, guiding principles, things that I lived the business every day, that this was critical to my thinking. It was important for everything that I do. So we're going to take a close look at all of this. We'll begin to lay out some of these. We're not going to really, go through and bore you to death with these things. But what I'd like to direct you to is our website at HAIRadio.com. I'm going to put some information there that will help you to craft your mission statement. So please take a moment, visit our website at www.HAIRadio.com. Now it's pronounced hair radio, but it only has one R. Go there and click on the tab that actually reads fan page, which is awesome. You go to the fan page and it'll be right there where you are directed on how to complete your mission statement, and we'll have some examples and all that wonderful good stuff there. So thank you so much, and I hope this is helpful. Again, your mission statement should reflect everything that your business is about. I'm Kerry Hines, and we'll be checking in with you throughout the broadcast. If you have questions, again, go to our website at hairradio.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Kerry Hines. Stay tuned.
Clint Beast on the boom.
You niggas be tripping.
What up, bro? You rocking with Statewide shit. I'm inviting everybody to take a look and listen to see what I got going on. You can catch me streaming on all music platforms under Statewide Chip or Statewide Bosses. You can also find me on social media, Statewide Chip on Facebook, Statewide Chip Official on Instagram, and Statewide Chip or Statewide Bosses on YouTube.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. Now, I have two very special guests joining us today. Well, they're from the world of education. It is my honor to welcome back to the show Dr. Joel A. Freeman, and welcoming for the very first time, Dr. Walter Milton, Jr. Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning and welcome. Welcome to the Hair Radio Morning Show.
Good morning. We are honored to be with you this morning.
Yes. Awesome.
Thank you, Kerry. We love being here and looking forward to our time together.
Absolutely. Well, listen, I want to kind of jump right on in. Dr. Freeman, we're going to kick off with you. You were kind enough to help us kind of launch the Hair Radio Morning Show 5 years ago, literally hundreds of episodes of this broadcast ago. And we're so excited because many of our listeners, you've touched folks around the world with your story. And so we're going to remind everybody about that, but I just wanted to officially welcome you back to the broadcast and how we were able to use that wonderful, wonderful interview as a great foundation for pushing us forward. And we're still here today. I think that's a big part of that. So thank you.
Well, I'm very thrilled that what you're doing and how you've done it, your integrity, your stick-to-itiveness, and it's an inspiration to all of us.
Wonderful. Well, listen, again, welcome to the show. And now I have to turn also to Dr. Walter Milton Jr. You are from the Rochester, New York area. And you are, when I tell you, I was just blown away at your story when I started to do some research. School superintendent for years, literally, author. Yes. So education, to put it mildly, is important. So, Dr. Milton, I have to get in there. What, you know, where did this come from, this whole, you know, this journey that you are on, that you've been on? And it's, I'm going to call it a track, I think. You know, so where did this come from in terms of jumping into the education or on the education wagon, I should say?
Well, you know, I had two teachers that impacted my life in ways in which you can one could never imagine. I had a teacher by the name of Adam Urbanski. He was a gentleman from Poland, and he talked about history. He was one of my high school history teachers, and he taught history in a way that you can only fall in love with. And he talked about the movers and shakers of history, the carriers of information, and how we have to learn to deconstruct things and find ourselves in the whole cloak of history. So he planted a major seed in me. Then I had a science teacher. Her name was Cassandra Frierson. And Cassandra Frierson said that I'm part of a history that goes all the way back to the beginning of time. And I was so glad to meet her because I had an experience in elementary school that my teacher attempted to teach black history, but she started off in slavery. And what happened, it had ushered so much shame and humiliation for me. So that those early years of my life, I was on this quest to find out some truths in history and where I played a role. And Dr. Frierson, or Cassandra Frierson, she said that my past is inexplicably tied to the beginning of time. And so as a result of those two individuals, I went into education, became a teacher, a principal, and then a school superintendent, and decided to step down and start my own company. And then it happened again. And when it happened this time, I said, I'm going to take action. When this whole quest and this desire and this love and passion for history came out, I said, I'm going to do something about it. So Joel Freeman was the first person that I've called. Joel has been a close friend of mine for many years, and I know that he is the curator of many African-American artifacts. And I said, Joel, would you go on this journey with me, man? And he didn't hesitate. Here we are. 2.5, almost 3 years later, with a final product, a finished product, rather. And our goal is to share our love letter to the world. I mean, this is our divine purpose and our mission as to why we exist.
And that is the reason that you guys are here today. And that is to introduce us to this amazing new book. And I'm going to have to thank you, Dr. Milton, for that. I'm going to have to turn now to Dr. Freeman. I'm going to ask you, Dr. Joel A. Freeman, first of all, again, welcome to the show. And just want to say we are going to turn to you to talk about this amazing new book. We want to make sure and get that on out there, Black History, An Inclusive Account of American History. Tell us about this book.
Yes, as Dr. Milton mentioned, it's a labor of love. It's 1,248 pages, weighs 5.5 pounds, has well over 2,500 images throughout, and about 500 of those images come straight from the collection my wife and I own. We own over 3,000 items. Documents and artifacts. The oldest piece dates back to 1553. And so we have put together, Walter and I, as he mentioned, we worked for about 2.5 years, putting in 12 16-hour days and working, I'm telling you, it was just like Groundhog Day every day, right. Just working at it and then going to sleep and working some more the next day and just day after day. So it was just, both of us look at it right now and just go, we don't even know how it happened, except God's fingerprints are all over it. Right. And we started in ancient Africa. And the reason why we started in ancient Africa is because we did not want to reinforce the notion, either implicitly or explicitly, that slavery was the beginning of black history. We wanted to talk about the mores, the folkways, the hunting, the gathering, the fishing, the industry, the agriculture, the ancient African kingdoms that transcend the current geopolitical lines. And now we're ready for the good, the bad, and the ugly of the last four centuries. And even when we get into slavery and the slave trade, we have a whole section just about slave rebellions. We talk about the trickery used, and we have actual stories of how people were tricked into coming on the ship, and or to be kidnapped to get on the ship. So we wanted to give a whole different view about this that is not normally given, at least that we could find. And then there's a gentle timeline that takes us all the way through to the struggle for civil rights. We then, once we have included that, then we get into the whole area of the economic system. We talk about arts, entertainment. We have a section on sports, black quarterbacks, the integration of the NBA, and then we have a whole section on 50 states, and it's where we provide some insights into black history in each state. So whatever state a listener is from, there will be some specific just a showcasing of what has happened in their particular state. Then the final unit is all about the North Star. It's over 100 pages where we have a timeline from 1491 on that describes all that happened, our interaction between United States and Canada. And then we tell stories, we share stories from mid-1800s, from a book called Refugees, that a gentleman by the name of Benjamin Drew went north, and he interviewed a lot of people, and then he put 114 stories, their life stories, into the book. And so in our textbook, we start in Vancouver all the way over to Halifax, Nova Scotia, and everything in between. The Don Settlement with Josiah Henson, and so on and so forth. So it's really a wonderful way to show how people from the South, many suffered from Stockholm Syndrome, how does a person leave not knowing where they're going to be going, and if they're going to get caught and maybe get killed or get chastised in horrific ways, and then the fugitive slave laws pushing them into Canada. So we really Walter and I have put together a book that the response we've been getting from around the country has truly been heartwarming, and we are very grateful to be the instruments used to be able to help put this together. And of course, as we've expanded after the writing was done, our wives are very much a part of this project, and we're grateful to them. And then more people came on that helped with curriculum design, with search engine optimization, media relations, professional development, and many other aspects that helped to, we now have a team of over 75 people that have helped to bring this to bear.
Well, I'm going to say I think you have at least 76. I'm on board, too. Make sure and add me on
okay.
in to that list. I saw that extensive list on your site. I was, at bh365.org. I was quite impressed. Listen, I want to make sure I get the title right. I don't. I think I just introduced it as Black History, but it's actually Black History 365. An inclusive
correct.
Account of American history. Is that correct?
Yes.
We landed on 365 because many times people view Black History Month as the main time to talk about Black history. But we decided that this is something that is an inclusive account of American history. That's the subtitle. And we also quote from a gentleman on the back cover. He's a quote on the back cover. His name is James Baldwin. He said, "American history is longer, larger, more various, more beautiful, and more terrible than anything anyone has ever said about it." And that's really, when Walter and I saw that quote, we just said, that's got to be on the cover. Because that encapsulates what we have done.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I have to say, as a matter of fact, Dr. Milton, I was going to ask you, being, of course, an educator as you are, and being out in the school system, how did that play a part? Because I just imagine that you were close, you were real, you had a real front row seat to what the kids needed, to what the students needed to learn. So I'm going to ask you, how did that play a part, or did it play a part in how you kind of, decided to come up with this idea that you guys have, worked on?
Well, it played a major part. What I saw in my years of education and what I still see now and working with school systems across the country is that there's a direct correlation with the lack of culturally competent instruction and educational approaches to the negative impact that has on student achievement. We also discovered that the lack of historical content has been a significant influencer of negative outcomes for Black students and communities, including lack of self-awareness, lack of self-esteem, lack of intrinsic motivation, decreased academic achievement, truancy, discipline referrals, and even some cases, some criminal activity, because what we found when our young people, not only Black children, but all children, when they have an understanding of who they are, where they came from, and the impact that their ancestors have made on this world, it just increases all the negative things to turn right into the positives, because we make that connection. And so what we found and discovered that the world, particularly America, is begging for something like this because of the past, our history that we have, and how those things still impact us to this day. So we wanted to really look at those things. We really wanted to look at the whole impact of the incarceration system and how that connected to education. And what we found is that there's this critical gap. And we believe that we have a solution for this gap. One of the things that we really focus on, and Joe will probably talk about that a little later, I'll just introduce the concept, but we said we need to develop critical thinkers, compassionate listeners, fact-based, respectful communicators, and action-oriented solutions. And we believe that BH365 will serve as an impetus to make that happen and to make our world a better place here in America, and to bring about a great deal of healing because we clarify things and misconceptions that we've been operating on for many years.
That's just, I'm blown away. And I have to say, Dr. Milton, and I was really touched, and I know we're here, we're going to absolutely get into every single aspect of Black History 365, you guys' new book, which is being used in the schools. But I have to draw some attention to when I came across one of your earlier books that talked about this. The title is A Matter of Life or Death, Why Black Men Must Save Black Boys in America's Public Schools. And I know you've written a couple of books, but that was I read a little bit of the synopsis, and I was just very impressed. So thank you for all the work that you are doing, that both of you are doing, on this incredible, incredible topic that, believe me, even, you know, I could put this on every day, you know, for years, and it would still just be scraping the surface of what needs to be done. But it's a wonderful thing to do as much research, and you guys can hear it. You've done a lot of research. I see the work, and it is incredible. It is absolutely incredible. So thank you both for that.
Thank you so much.
Yes, well, very much welcome. Well, listen, if you're just joining us, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. It's my pleasure to welcome these two incredible educators to Hair Radio. And Dr. Joel A. Freeman, he's been with us before. We're so excited to welcome him back. It's been 5 years. And he's joined, of course, or we're joined, with Dr. Walter Milton, Jr., who we're also excited, a New Yorker, a fellow New Yorker, to the broadcast. And now, Dr. Freeman, you're in Maryland area, correct? Aren't you still out in Maryland?
Yes, not far from Annapolis.
Okay. And so we have a lot to talk about, because just trying to catch everybody up a little bit, and then I have some more questions for you, Dr. Milton. But just to kind of bring everybody up to speed, Dr. Freeman, I recall that you started off early on, and you were a chaplain for, wasn't it the NBA? And you did all these amazing things and just had such what seemed on that interview, just a deep understanding for folks at an early age. And that's what I got from that. And I was just quite impressed and went on to create that whole space with all these artifacts that you have that chronicle the lives of folks all the way to Africa and here. And so I'm just very impressed and, you know, just happy to have you here. So what can you tell us about your collection these days? Anything? Of course, we've got your book, which is going to be a big part of that, Black History 365. But what else can you tell us about the collection that you have amassed all of this? And I know you have pictures inside the book, inside of Black History 365.
Yes. Yeah, it's a big part of the book and a big part of, I think, the contribution, because it's exclusively available to the book. The images, there's now over 4,000 high-resolution images.
Amazing.
And anyone who tries to put together something like this without images, it's just very difficult. And what people, when we went to the printers in Ohio who manufactured this book, one of the young men, I don't know how long he'd been working there, but maybe a decade or two or close, 15 years maybe, and we were just talking with him, and he says, yeah, he says, when I came in this morning, I thought I was working on a National Geographic project. and so the collection is made up of over 3,000 items. We've done two exhibits at the United Nations. We had over 1 million visitors. I've done three in concert with the White House. I've done two at the Clinton Presidential Library. I've done a number with Secret Service at their headquarters in D.C. and a number of other venues around the country. And it's just been wonderful. And when Walter called me about this project, I didn't have to think about it, because I knew intuitively that you know, I had been building this collection, and it's perfect for a curriculum in terms of the types of items. I would pass over 200 items to get to that 201st item that would help tell the story. And so I was very selective about the items that I collected and brought together. So it's kind of a unique type of collection, and I think when people get the textbook and they start looking at the images, especially the first two units, because the first two units are about ancient Africa and slavery and the slave trade. So I have a number of items. For instance, I have one item when I was in Elmina Castle in Ghana on the banks of of the Atlantic Ocean. Mm-hmm. And I met with the village elders there, and they voted unanimously to donate a set of shackles, an actual set of shackles from Elmina Castle. And I was truly humbled and honored by that, because I don't think they did that very often.
Exactly.
And so those are the kinds of stories behind many of the pieces of the collection. Just had over 75 given to me, and you know, had to acquire a lot of things myself. But this gentleman, his father worked for TWA Airlines.
Well, so did I. Wow.
Oh, really?
Yes, small world.
So he was responsible for all the continent of Africa back in the 40s and I
wow.
think 50s, right in that range. And he had, of course, being with working in the airline and into Africa, he had many people sourcing original artifacts. We're not talking about stuff for tourists. I mean, original, like doors on a chief's hut, you know, and shackles and masks and figurines and all sorts of items. Well, his dad passed away. Of course, his dad, working at the airline, could ship it back to California.
Sure.
And when he passed away, my friend told me, he said, I'm going to make sure that there's a number of these that are in your collection. He had this sense of urgency. And my friend Pat passed away about 3 months ago.
Oh,
and he had this urgency
wow.
to get these items to me. And he wasn't even sick, you know, just had a massive heart attack, and he
wow.
was gone.
That's...
And so I feel very honored, and am holding those items very carefully, and we have some of them pictured in the textbook in honor of him and his family.
Wow, that's very nice. I have to say, just when I look at this amazing book, Black History 365, and you mentioned 1,248 pages. I have to wonder about the schools. Like, how have the folks received this book, the textbook? How, Dr. Milton, let's ask you that. How has it been received by the teachers and the students, for that much?
They have received the book extremely well. Many of them are not only saying that this is for 9th through 12th grade students, many of them are saying this engages all ages. This should be a book that's in every household across this country, in particular, and in general across the world, because it has so many features. It really does. Also, Morehouse College down in Atlanta is going to be one of the first colleges launching the textbook in January. We are also in a conversation with Hampton University in Virginia that's going to do that. And then we have had a number of people who have purchased personal copies of the textbook. So we believe that it has this book. Throughout the pages, it's a healing mechanism. I just want to quickly go back, if you can indulge me for a quick second,
sure.
To talk about these images. And I don't know if I've ever shared this with Joel, but it was an extremely tedious task to find the images. And he, like he said, he would go through 200 images just to get to that 201 to say, hey, this is it here. I mean, it wasn't anything that was easily done. I mean, it was arduous and it was daunting. And in some cases, I saw and felt the pain that he went through just to make sure that it was beyond excellent. Because the images not only tell a story, the images bring the words alive of that book.
I'm blown away. I love just as you, you know, respond to this, and you're just painting an amazing picture of Black History 365. Now, how do folks find this book, Dr. Milton? How do folks get their hands on a personal copy or an edition for, you know, like you said, should be in every household?
Absolutely. Well, we're asking the world to go to bh365.org. That's bh365.org. And one of the major features that we have in the book, besides the mini QR codes, because we wanted to have a strong integration of technology, we've also embedded music in the book from award-winning Grammy producer by the name of Dr. Kevin Cates, affectionately known as Kale. And Kale has developed 40 songs. He's a producer for Jay-Z, T.I., Rick Ross, Drake, Snoop Dogg, and a host of others. So we have an expert who has put together amazing songs, and he got the words from the text. And they are just powerful. I mean, they will bring tears to your eyes.
Is this kind of like a soundtrack for the book?
Yes, you can definitely say that. And as Joel said, we have a Hamilton in the making.
I see.
Yeah,
wow.
I call it an anthology of black history, because basically what we've done is, you know, he's doing a song for each chapter, lifting lyrics from the text itself and the concepts surrounding the text. And so you start in ancient Africa and bring it all the way up to George Floyd, some of the things that are happening in our culture today. It's like ripping pages out of the headlines, the way we've done it. And then we have an e-book version that is available, and so that will allow us to even add more items, you know, as things happen in our culture, so that we can continue to keep it updated and in the e-book version.
And that's important, right, always to make sure that, you know, I keep going back to, I forget whose book it was, but I like that word living, like living history. It just keeps on going, and I love that. I have to tell you, this is just amazing. We're talking with the authors of this amazing book, the folks behind Black History 365, this amazing, incredible book. We're talking with Dr. Joel A. Freeman and Dr. Walter Milton, Jr. So we're real excited to have them with us today. 1,248 pages. This is a huge book, but it is packed with so much information and knowledge that we need. And I can't say it enough. I really can't. I think this is a game changer out there. Dr. Freeman, why was this so necessary, though? You know, there are tons of books. Folks will say, I saw the books that were out there when I was in school, and those history books seem just fine. What do you say to folks who say something like that, Dr. Freeman?
Well, every time there is a racially charged incident in America, there are some very smart people, passionate people who get on TV. You know, we affectionately call them talking heads.
Are you a stylist, barber, nail tech, or involved in personal care on any level? Are you good at what you do? I bet you are. And as being as good as you are, that leaves you less time to handle your clients. I mean, as far as booking appointments, product sales, pricing, and all that. Well, I have something that'll help you on that end and still allow you to be great. ChairWatch. It's a new mobile booking platform that allows your client direct access to you. It'll allow them to book, change, cancel appointments, place themselves on standby, buy products, and even be able to send you direct messages. And that is just a taste of all the services that ChairWatch provides. Sounds good? Then check it out at ChairWatch.com. Or you can download the app via the Apple Store or Google Play. ChairWatch, a new and better way to connect with your clients.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Terry Hines. Stay tuned.
It's two thumbs up. The Hair Radio Morning Show goes to the movies. It's our brand new Movie Talk radio segment. Listen live. Tune in right here on our broadcast for our unique review of the latest movie. Join us live on the air to chat. It's Movie Talk on the Hair Radio Morning Show. The Let Your Spirit Soar segment on the Hair Radio Morning Show is about getting your day and ours started with positive thoughts, well wishes, great quotes, and amazing affirmations.
So if you have one you'd like to share, please send it through our Salon TV Network app, and we'll get it featured on the air.
I'm Carrie Hines. You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. It is my honor to bring back, after 6 or 7 long years, to the Hair Radio Morning Show, the one and only, let me just say this, she is the very first board-certified trichologist in the western part of the United States. Again, it's my honor to welcome back the one and only Dr. Linda Emerson. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to the Hair Radio Morning Show officially.
Good morning, Carrie. Thank you so much for having me back. I am truly, truly honored to be back and to share some information with your listening audience with you.
Absolutely. Well, I've got to explain, because this is the craziest thing in the world. You've actually, our listeners are familiar with you because we've been running the last appearance on this show for almost 10 years. It's been a long time. And I said, it's got to be time to bring Dr. Linda Emerson back to the show. And your information has helped so many listeners around the world who've tuned into the Hair Radio Morning Show. So I just wanted to say thank you. Thank you so much for just sharing your knowledge and taking the time to do so with our audience.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My pleasure.
Well, you did good. You did good. And I have to say, and one of my favorite things about this is we've been on, the Hair Radio Show's been on in different versions and variations for about 25 years. And the last version has been on for 6 years here on Blog Talk. However, you were on before that, technically. You were actually on before we even launched this show. And since we launched, we're up to about almost 550 shows. So that is just amazing. It's been a while since we've chatted. And even though I've been hearing your voice. So real, real good stuff. Well, listen, Dr. Emerson, let me go ahead and jump right on in. Because first of all, you are a trichologist and a very respected trichologist. You know, long before it's become fashionable for folks to just call themselves, per se, you know, a trichologist or, you know, being in the field of trichology, you truly, truly have been leading the charge on healthy hair care. But I want to talk about first, let's just, for the listeners who have no idea what trichology is, we have folks who are in the industry as well as who are not. And so, I'm sure, have questions. What is a trichologist? Share that with everybody.
Absolutely. The actual definition of a trichologist is an expert in hair loss and scalp disorder conditions. So we take hair science to a completely new level. So we're actually getting to the root of the problem microscopically, and we will look at a combination of internal and external factors. And there are so many contributing factors that may occur within an individual. That's why it's so important that it is a case-by-case basis. So I love what I do. This profession has really been very rewarding, just to see the transformation, which has a...
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now my very special guest with us is from the world of barbering. The Hair Radio Morning Show is proud to welcome Rick Borland. Rick, good morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Carrie. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. And it's great to have you with us. And I want to tell the folks, you know, barbering, we don't get a chance often to talk about barbering so much here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. But if there's, you know, and we're kind of ushering this in because you're being introduced to our amazing fans, and for many reasons that we're going to get into in just a bit. But I want you to tell the folks out there, where are you located, and a little bit about yourself, Rick.
I'm located in Malvern, New York. I am a barber instructor. I'm a teacher. So I teach hair to high school students. I teach also future barbers on how to get their license, and I make sure that they have all the necessary tools they need and knowledge they need to take the New York State Barber Test so they can come and train with me here, where I tell them about things like, I teach them things about sanitation, straight razor, body positioning, all the things that they need, facial, everything that they need to pass the New York State Barber Exam. So I'm an educator as well as a celebrity barber, and I've been doing it for a pretty long time. It's my joy. I love hair. I love how it makes people feel.
Well, I have to say, because I was aware of like a lot of the cosmetology classes that they have in the high schools, but I was not as familiar with the barbering right here in my home state. So I love this. Can you tell us how this kind of, because I'm sure that I'm not alone out there and that there may be some states where this is something that they may wish to as well start. So how did this whole thing come about for you in terms of becoming a barber instructor with the school?
Well, what happened was there was a program at Rikers Island that I was teaching hair at. We were at Rikers, and we were doing a program for the inmates at Rikers, which
serious,
I partnered with.
Serious thing.
Wow. Yeah, so it's you know, teaching in a prison, you know, is a little difficult. It can be. But you know what? When you empower people, especially our people, to
yeah.
you know, have a skill that can make them look better and feel better, and you know, you teach a man how to fish and not give him the fish, it does something for just their self-esteem and their self-awareness. What happened was the Rikers thing really wasn't the best choice, I would say. It was a good thing to do, and then what happened was, you know, the program for barbering came up and in a particular high school, and they wanted somebody that was homegrown. They wanted somebody that was licensed, experienced, and then somebody, more importantly, that knew not just barbering, but how to relate to our kids and how to teach. And I've been teaching for years. That's one of the things I've been doing in my own barbershop, is taking, you know, young guys off the street, letting them sweep up, teaching them the business of barbering, teaching them the nuances, you know, all the nuances, and teaching them how not just to be the guy that's sitting there cutting hair, but just different hair textures. And a lot of my kids, a lot of my students have gone on and opened their own barbershops and stuff like that. So I took what I was doing in my community and made it something that we took to the high schools. So, the high school actually had a need for barbering, because the students were saying, listen, it's, you know, I don't want to be a cosmetologist. You know, cosmetology, you know, they felt it like it was too feminine for some of the young high school kids there. And so the guys wanted something that was kind of in their scope. So they introduced barbering, and, you know, we've been at it for a few years, and it's been wonderful.
Well, I have to say, it's funny that you say that about the guys were saying, oh, it's this and that to, you know, enter into the cosmetology program. But I have to also say there's also a bigger argument there, too, that I remember, depending upon what state you're in, there was a while that, you know, in some places you were compelled to take the entire cosmetology course when you were interested in barbering. There was very little in barbering in that course at the time. So
it's really
interesting for me when you say that. I'm like, oh, my, I remember this kind of thing. So awesome.
Yeah.
What do you say? Go ahead, Rick. I'm sorry. What do you say to this?
You know, so, I mean, Terry, like, this is like a – I don't know how to put it in a – it's almost like – like, there are some people that go to to culinary school and they still can't cook. You know, like, you know, they can prep, you know what I mean?
Oh, Rick, Barbara, you got to send your letters to Rick now, okay? I said some.
I love eating out. I think some, with all due respect to the people that do what they do, right. I just think that when you're in the game, when you're standing behind a chair, when you're in customers, you know, you're breathing it and in it and around it, it's a completely different animal than somebody teaching you just theory, you know? You know, so it's a different animal. You know, we teach one thing about hair cosmetology or barbering, which is great, is that, you know, we can do the book, we can do the Milady's book, we can do all that other stuff,
mm-hmm.
watch videos and talk to other people. But for you to cut hair, you got to cut hair. You know, you got to be in it. You have to put some clippers, some shears, some comb. You got to do it. So, you know. It's like anything else. You can't box by watching a film. You got to actually get in the ring. You got to do what you got to do. So, it's the practical part of hair that is so fascinating. You know, that makes it great, especially for high school students. Students need to see their work. They need to see what they've built. If you're a sculptor, if you're a baker, if you're a chef, if you're a designer, you know, whatever you do, when you see that thing come together, it just gives you a sense of pride.
Well, Rick, my big thing is looking at it also with opportunities of entrepreneurship. This is where that class that you're teaching, where they can turn it into their own business, each one of those
Absolutely.
Students. And that even could be
Absolutely.
A network. So
Yes,
go ahead, Rick.
Sarah.
You know I'm so excited about all this. But go ahead.
So what happens is, just like mm-hmm. high school, when I started cutting hair, I was 14. I was, 14? I think I was a freshman in high school, Mount Vernon High School. And
Money earning Mount Vernon.
That's
all
where
I'm
from.
I was
a freshman in high school, and what happened was, the story is, I started cleaning up a barbershop when I was 14, and when I was 13, around 13 to 14, and around 14 to 15, I looked at some of the people working there who were not high school graduates, who were not college educated, and these guys had pockets full of money, and I thought, I can do this too, and I lied to my best friend, Don, shout out to Don Thomas, I lied to him, my good friend, and his father brought him to the barbershop 2 weeks later, and I cut his hair, and I never cleaned up again. So from 15 to now, and here's the thing that's crazy, Kerry, is that I have guys, and when we start our classes in September, I tell all of my students, I says, by the end of the month, you guys will be cutting each other's hair. And they're like, Mr. Borland, you're absolutely crazy. There's no way I'm letting them touch my hair. And by October, we got not only the people in our class, but we got half of the school that's looking in the door getting haircuts.
Wow.
You know, and here's the crazy part. Some of these high school guys are charging, you know, we're talking about 30 days of learning how to hold a clipper, how to bone structure, 30 days, 30 to 40, not even a full 30 days, and they're shaping each other up and wanting to get paid. You know, my students have gone on, shout out to Joel Cooper, who is, he's a point guard for, I think it's for Central Connecticut. He was one of my students, one of my first students, and he cuts the whole basketball team.
Yeah.
Miles Blyden, who's out here, he works in a barbershop. Got a host of our Dominican brothers, young sons that are they're cutting hair. Some of my African students. And here's the thing that's crazy, Kerry. My female students are some of the best you have ever seen. They're cutting their fathers. They're cutting their uncles. They have, you know, we have a full barbershop in our high school, and a lot of our girl students are really doing their thing. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's the entrepreneurship. It's immediate. You know, it's great. It's immediate. Hair always grows, so we'll always have a chance to cut it and make some money.
Now, Rick, I have to ask you, when you started out and the barbering industry I think the better question, is it the same as it is now that it was when you started, or has there been significant changes along the way? Is there anything you can shed on that?
Here's the thing that with barbering that's changed. When I started 100 years ago, it was not that many barbershops, you know, so that was one. Two, there was a mentorship, like, so you had to pay your dues, and you know, you're in the communication, you had to pay your dues. There was no such thing as you just walking off the street and picking up a pair of clippers. Like, for you to get in a barbershop, you either A, had to go to school and you know, have put some time in, or B, you had to take my route where you had to clean up hair, you had to go to the store, you had to learn the clippers, you had to do the orders, you had to intern, you had to work until you got a shot, and then your shot came from your friend, you know, your friend that said, hey, you know, can you think you can shape me up? You know, thank God for my father, my brothers, my brother Mike, all the people that, you know, you gave me my shot when I was starting out. And so the barbershop has changed. I think the industry is better than it ever been, because now we got stuff like fill-in and man weaves and you know, there's different hairstyles and just different things that barbers can do that they weren't doing before. But then again, on the other side, I think it's cheapened, because everybody who picks up a pair of clippers thinks they're a barber. So now you have barbers cutting hair at their homes. And then there's a certain price point that when the market is flooded, people don't understand the skill that's involved in cutting hair, because it just becomes, well, you just cut hair. No, I don't just cut hair. I'm not the guy that's in his basement that, you know, doesn't clean his clipper, that doesn't know what he's doing. You know, it's completely different. It's completely different.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. What is the best way to describe it then? Because that sounds like a barber, a real barber, is A, B, or C, as opposed to just somebody, like you said, anybody picking up the clippers. Because I could pick up clippers, but let me tell you, you don't want to see me trying to shape myself up. Believe me. And we were left to our own devices in this past, you know, with
the
situation happening.
Yes, we were.
So,
yes, we were.
So what makes a barber? What makes a good barber, shall we say?
Let me tell you something, and I'm going to tell you the number one thing that I teach my students, right, what makes a good counselor, right, what makes a good friend, is you have 70 to 80% of barbering is listening, is listening to what the client wants. Let them tell you what they want, and it's transcribing what's inside their mind to your hand. 90%, I say 80% of this thing is listening, 20% is skill. So what makes a good barber is somebody that listens. What makes a good barber is somebody that is up on what the latest haircuts are, and somebody that knows their client, you know, somebody that knows. You know, some people say, you know what, I want to try this, that, and the other. But you have to say to them, do you really want to try X, Y, Z? And you would have to give them options and choices and talk to them before they make that commitment. So, and then somebody that is skillful enough to have that has the right tools and material and products, you know, so being a barber is listening and then being skillful enough to translate what they want and put it on their head, you know, and following the rules. So, you know, that's what it is. Like, what makes a good friend? Somebody that you can call and they're not just talking when you talk. They're like, Carrie, what's going on with you? Talk.
Exactly.
And that's what the bond is. And I think that's what the bond with barbering and club. Because we're not just barbers. Barbers are counselors, psychiatrists.
And in our
preachers,
community, your dads quite often.
Dads, absolutely. Listen, I'm going to tell you something, Carrie. One time we had a single, you know, a lady that went through a divorce, husband walked out, and she was too proud to ask for any money, so we hired her sons for the whole week. Her sons were 11 and 12, 13, something like that, and we paid them over and above, you know, what they were, you know, and they swept up hair and went to the store. and we made sure that the mom got that money. So, and she came back and said that was how we ate for 2 weeks.
Wow.
Because of what you've done. So that's community. So that's what barbers are. Barbers are, we're not just the guy that makes your haircut or your fade looks good. We're the guys in the community. We've had clothes drives. We had, we fed the homeless. You know, we've partnered with churches. You know, we've done a lot. We've done a lot. We've partnered with other people in different faiths for our community. You know, and that's one thing about the barber shop.
Well, and now you partner with Hair Radio. So we are so proud to have you, Rick Borland. We are so proud to have
you. Thank you so much, man.
We're
going to do great things.
Absolutely. Now, I want to first tell the folks a little bit about your shop. You are in New York. Please, again, remind everybody where you are and give us a little bit of a – we're going to give you a commercial. Tell us about your shop.
Well, here he is, Unisex, in Mount Vernon, 414 East 3rd Street. We are a hair studio. We prefer appointments. We specialize in all kinds of hair, but our specialty, of course, is urban hair. We do all kinds of cuts. We practice social distancing. You can't be in the shop right now without, proper, protection. But we're a different kind of barbershop. We're not the hood barbershop. You know, our barbershop, we play
old school music. We don't want to offend anybody with hood, the word hood.
No, we don't. We're not.
But we're not,
you have all the barbershops in the hood for that. We're a grown man barbershop. You know, we're the family barbershop. We're the barbershop where your uncle and your grandmother can come, and we can be in conversation, and we can be on hair radio and talk. And nobody's offended by, the music that's playing or the things that's on
the talk
TV
sometimes.
TV.
We've all been in those shops where the talk gets downright crazy. So do you control that to some degree there?
First of all, I'm a man of faith, so and I believe that for you to be successful in business, you have to be successful. You have to appeal to more than one type of demographic,
uh-huh.
right? So, and I think that it doesn't matter with your, what you do on your Sunday or your Saturday or whatever
day.
you choose to be. But everybody wants to have a conversation where we can talk freely, but we can't be offensive. So one thing we don't do is we try not to. Not even try not to. There is no tolerance. Thank you. There is no tolerance for profanity. We don't do profanity. We don't do illicit type of conversations. We can talk, but it's how we talk. So we do conversations where sometimes it gets really intense in here. And we let people be free, but it's respectful because we have all kind of people here. So this is not your average barbershop. It's not for everybody, but it is for everybody. But it's for people that want to have a family. They want a family, or they want to have a grown man conversation, or they don't want to have to curve their behavior, because somebody walked in. The barbershop I grew up in, we all had real conversations, and you would talk to a CEO, you would talk to the bishop of a church. Or you would talk to the guy that just got a record deal, and we can all sit here and talk and learn. So it's not the typical barbershop, but, the haircuts are amazing, and, that's what we do. That's the barbershop I like to be in.
Well, listen, if you've just joined us, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, with me on the line is a gentleman who's in New York. His name is Rick Borland. He is a barber instructor, of course, a barbershop owner, and so many other things. You're an educator. We are just loving this. What about the man weaves? Now, I heard you mention it earlier. I kind of wanted to ask about it. What can you tell us what a man weave is? And is this new for barbershops to have to be doing man weaves?
Yeah, listen. So for years, our sisters, God bless them, have had the privilege and opportunity to, if they had hair challenges, that they had stuff sewn in or glued in. And for the most part, they made them feel great or, it gave them a chance for their hair to grow, whatever. And so what is our options for the brother that's going bald?
Clint Beast on the board.
You niggas be tripping.
What up, bro? You rocking with Statewide Chip. I'm inviting everybody to take a look and listen to see what I got going on. You can catch me streaming on all music platforms under Statewide Chip or Statewide Bosses. You can also find me on social media, Statewide Chip on Facebook, Statewide Chip Official on Instagram, and Statewide Chip or Statewide Bosses on YouTube.
You Go Girl. You Go Girl is a brand new product line that includes an edge control hairsprays and a product that also offers relief to those dealing with an itchy scalp. Now, if you're looking to moisturize and hold twists and locks in place, You Go Girl offers a gel cream. And for the hair braiders out there, You Go Girl has a hair brand that's made of the highest of quality hair. Now, it's available in a variety of colors and textures. So, go to www.yougogirlbraidhair.com. That's you like uniform, gogirlbraidhair.com. And tell them you heard about them right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. You Go Girl.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Treat, and I'm shouting out this Hair Radio Show with Carrie
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
Hi, everybody. Coming up this week on the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show for the week ending Friday, December 10th of 2021. Now, our amazing lineup of guests include entrepreneurs from the hair industry, Tracy of Active Follicles, who joins us from sunny Southern California, Shakura Rodriguez-Bay from Brooklyn, New York, who is a longtime stalwart of the natural hair industry, and so much more. And then Wednesdays and Fridays, each week, mid-show, we're excited to introduce you to Jossie of Au Naturel. Now, she'll be telling you all about her great product line and answering your questions live on the air. Then, you don't want to miss our next installment of the radio show within a radio show. It's its own segment, our 10 most fascinating guests, right here on the broadcast. And every Tuesday morning at 8:30, it's time for a live episode of Vet Talk Radio Show with Michael Hopkins and Michael's Angels. Now, this special announcement is courtesy of our legacy advertisers, folks like FixYourFeet.com, Rugged Evolution Beard Care, Stimulating Roots, Smooth Black, Smooth Black Ink, and our entire family of advertisers. You can be a legacy advertiser too. Just celebrate 1 year as a sponsor of our program, and we will have you indoctrinated into this amazing lineup. Again, I'm Carrie Hines, and back to the show.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and most of you know who we are from being in and around the hair business for 25 years. It is my great pleasure and honor to welcome this gentleman to our broadcast. This is also the launch of our daily podcast, I should say. Mr. Howard Baker, you are the person behind this new organization or association, I should call it, the Male Cosmetologists Association. And so I just wanted you to come on and share your thoughts, and let's have some discussion around this topic. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carrie. Good afternoon, and thank you again for having me this afternoon on your broadcast.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, Mr. Baker, so you are a licensed cosmetologist in what state? Where are you guys located?
I am in the state of Georgia, and I have been licensed for 33 years. I operate in the Atlanta area, but more concentrated, the Tucker area. It's called Tucker, Georgia, but it's a little concentrated area that's considered Atlanta.
Oh, okay. Well, awesome. And we want to shout out all of my amazing Hair Radio Morning Show fans in and around that vicinity community down there. Now, listen, I want to kind of jump right on in. Why an association for men?
The Association for Men is basically, it's a brotherhood that has been formed to just enrich the male cosmetologist, and we are a great number in a huge industry that's dominated mostly by women's stylists. So we felt a need to create an association, a brotherhood of male licensed cosmetologists, and the key word is licensed, to protect us and build us up and just create more of, we're not a fraternity, we're not a Greek organization, but just that feel of an organization of that type. So we can promote education, brotherhood, and inspiration.
Awesome. Now, you say that, you know, that the industry itself, the hair industry, hair beauty industry, is dominated by women. And you say this is pretty much why you formed this amazing new entity. So can you explain to us a little bit, like kind of explain some of the ways you feel that perhaps it's a little unleveled and why this was so necessary?
Well, you know, of course, you know, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry. And I would feel, and I know it's probably true if we look at statistics, that the huge percentage of the industry is run or operated or licensed by women. And the men, we are just as strong, but we have to come together and bring a unity and a strength amongst ourselves. So because everybody can be an alpha and everybody is individual, a lot of us have entered into a trade and maybe didn't go to college and had that desire to be a part of a fraternity, which was myself. I always wanted to be a part of a fraternity. So I was at one point going to college just to be a part of a fraternity.
Wow.
Right. And so, but then this opportunity came. So just to give you a synopsis of it, our founder, who is Darnell Sullivan, who was a hairstylist and operated, he actually worked here in Atlanta for some time. He had the idea to come up with this group, and we started out just as a Facebook group, and we were posting pictures and getting likes and things of that nature, and then it formed into the need of an association because we all had that feeling like we need to create a brotherhood where we would have an umbrella that we can all be under and support one another if there was a need for enlighten us in areas of weakness of education or if we needed an inspiration if we were down at times or if we just needed a need to just be together. And, you know, you're always stronger in numbers. You can stand strong alone, but we're stronger together. So,
absolutely. Wow. Well, I
so
think it's – yes, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Are you a stylist, barber, nail tech, or involved in personal care on any level? Are you good at what you do? I bet you are. And as being as good as you are, that leaves you less time to handle your clients. I mean, as far as booking appointments, product sales, pricing, and all that. Well, I have something that'll help you on that end and still allow you to be great. ChairWatch. It's a new mobile booking platform that allows your client direct access to you. It'll allow them to book, change, cancel appointments, place themselves on standby, buy products, and even be able to send you direct messages. And that is just a taste of all the services that ChairWatch provides. Sounds good? Then check it out at ChairWatch.com, or you can download the app via the Apple Store or Google Play. ChairWatch. A new and better way to connect with your clients.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. It's Tuesday morning, December 7th of 2021. It's about 23 minutes past the hour of 7 here in New York City. I want to bring to the line a gentleman who comes up today, right here on our broadcast at about 8:30 Eastern Time, 7:30 Central. His name is Michael Hopkins, and he's out of the state of Virginia. Michael hosts the program, popular right here on the network, again, Vet Talk Radio Show. And Michael, good morning, and welcome again to the broadcast. I know we'll be chatting a little bit later between 8:30 and 9 for a brand new edition of Vet Talk Radio Show that you host with your amazing Michael Angels. Officially, good morning to you, and thanks so much for calling in.
Morning, Kay. Good morning. It is a beautiful day down here in Spotsylvania, Virginia.
Yes, and Michael, I wanted to, one of the reasons I'm glad you decided, you know, to give us a quick call, you're doing a special broadcast today. It is a day of recognition for this atrocity that happened in Pearl Harbor. Can you tell the folks what this day means to you and the way that you honor these lives lost?
Well, it means a lot to me, Kerry, because like most veterans, we as veterans, it's not like we just want to go off to a war somewhere and serve our country. And those brave people, they were all brave people. They had no idea
yeah.
what was going to happen to them that day.
Right.
And it's just so honorable because at this time, Kerry, the World War II era veterans, Pearl Harbor, they're dwindling down to no. I mean, these guys are like from their 90s to over 100 years old.
Well, sure.
And
yeah, you're talking, yeah, from, you know,
right.
80 years just ago.
Yeah, 80
and
years ago.
And so you're going to cover this in your broadcast today, Michael Hopkins. What else do you guys have planned at 8:30?
Oh, and Kerry, today also, we're going to be touching on a topic that a lot of vets don't know about and their families. We're going to be talking about caregivers.
Caregivers.
Basics, the fundamentals of it. And a lot of veterans don't know that they can have one of their family members formally be a caregiver and be recognized by the VA as a caregiver. And it's
wow.
got some perks with it, too, believe it or not. And we're going to get into that today on Vet Talk Radio Show, live at 8:30.
Exactly, in about an hour. And so, please, we're going to ask that you keep it right here. It sounds very interesting. In the meanwhile, you guys have set up a wonderful Vet Talk Radio fan page. And it's available around the clock. You can go to it anytime, day or night. At www.hairadio.com. Again, it's hairadio.com. There's only one R. And so it's pronounced hairradio.com. And it's so important about this is that you guys always put what is coming up on your next show right there on that page, along with all kinds of other details. And I think there's a link there that will take you to the VA site, the official VA site that has a lot of information about your subject today, the leading topic that you'll be covering that you mentioned. So Michael Hopkins, I want to say thanks so much for checking in with us, and we look forward to you at 8:30.
Oh, yeah, we're looking forward to it also, Kerry. Good talking to you
awesome.
This morning.
Likewise. All right, folks, keep it right here. We've got a whole lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to go, so we're going to have you to kind of stay with us. We're back live. You're listening to a very, very special broadcast of the Hair Radio Morning Show. It is our annual year-end review for 2021 and this episode, and it is my great honor to bring to the line my co-host for the episode. You guys know her. She is a radio personality in her own right, and doing so many incredible things out there. She was also an announcer right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Again, let's give a warm, warm welcome of appreciation to the one and only Miss Mary Reed Johnson. Good morning, and
Carrie.
Welcome. Yes, welcome back.
Thank you, thank you. Always a pleasure to be here with you.
Well, listen,
Do we really need to look back? Because remember... When Lotta White looked back, she turned to a pillar of salt.
Well, let me tell you, Mary Reed Johnson, we have a lot. Yes, we're going to get into quite a bit. This is a show. This is a true radio show that we're going to really look back. Some of it, you know, it's kind of like yanking off a Band-Aid of sorts. You got it done. It may be a little bit of, momentary, as they say, discomfort in the medical world, but you're going to have a long lasting impact once you open up and expose that to the air again and just embracing what's next. And I have to say,
I trust you to help us heal. So absolutely. I'm on.
Thank you. Well, I think we are both going to be doing that today, Mary Reed Johnson. So it's nice to have you back. First of all, we're going to get into a lot of what happened in 2021. But if you guys can remember, our year really kind of started a little bit earlier than that. And mostly, of course, you can't, you know, the elephant in the room obviously is the pandemic. So it kind of, you know, I thought when we were looking at producing this special broadcast for you guys, we were looking at how did we want to frame this? Do you want to talk about the pandemic early on in the broadcast, or do you want to talk about it a little later? However, we came to the conclusion that, you know, the pandemic really, it's called the pandemic for a reason. It's literally across everything, and it really set the foundation for, I mean, you can't escape it. It truly is the elephant in the room, and you have to address it.
It absolutely shaped us.
Absolutely. Well, listen, let's start there, Mary. And as you guys out there know, we've all lived through this. It did not start in 2020. It didn't start in 2021. It probably didn't even start in 2020, but that's another story. So, Mary, let's look back for a moment, and let's take a look. When January of 2021, we were already reeling from dealing with the pandemic. There was a whole lot of talk. If I recall correctly, the folks were kind of – and let me, before we even get deep into this discussion – let's let folks know that what they can also expect in today's broadcast. It's not just a regurgitation of pandemic talk. There is so much to look at that happened in 2021. we're going to cover some of the biggest news stories, some of the biggest pop cultural events, some of the, you know, things from the political world. We're also going to look at what is next for us. And, of course, as with any big, you know, the end of the year, it gives us a moment to look back at some of the folks who have passed on and not going to be part of that whole thing to move into the next year. And we're not even talking about the over 750,000 lives lost to the pandemic. So Mary, let's go back in this. As I was just saying, let's take a look at when the year started. We were kind of reeling. I think at that point, the vaccines were just kind of being introduced. They weren't even rolled out, I don't think, at the beginning of the year. I mean, at the part of the beginning of the year. So let's say, what do you recall about that period, and how were you affected? Mary Reed Johnson.
Wow. Well, I would say as early as 2019, there were some stirrings going on, and we kind of poo-pooed everything through 2020. Our leadership poo-pooed everything. And so by the time 2021
right.
hit, our current head of state was really full steam ahead trying to get something approved that people would trust, you know, vaccines in arms so that we could maybe get our lives back. And so it was a tough and uphill battle, but I'd say current head of state got some stuff done that was very much needed, or we'd, I think, have many more casualties than we do.
Right. Now, that's a very interesting point, and if you look at it, because if I recall correctly, for you guys, President Trump had kind of started with the whole vaccine rollout, trying to get the whole thing started with that. But Joe Biden came in because it looked like it was as if the President Trump had kind of stopped and didn't do anything else. And so Joe Biden and his folks literally picked up the mantle, and they literally ran all the way across the finish line with this, getting the vaccines introduced and getting emergency authorization, use authorization out there to folks, and literally making huge news with the nurse who was the first to receive the vaccine in our country. And so, as you said, and I love the wonderful phrase that you just said, poo-pooed, because that is exactly what happened with the former administration under the Trump folks, who it appeared that were a bit, resistant to this whole idea of the pandemic. And there was even some discussions before that they knew, when they knew, how they knew, and this information was not made really get wind of this whole thing until I think the dam broke in like February, if you will. I think February of 2021. And I seem to recall, I'm in Brooklyn, New York, and Mary, you're generally out in the Minneapolis, Minnesota area. So we got a chance to look from our perspective, and I recall here in New York, now in my community, I live in and mixed in with a lot of folks who are of Asian descent, and they had already been wearing masks around my neighborhood for years, literally. That's
well,
the truth.
COVID is also known as SARS-2. And SARS, they had dealt with in many countries, especially Asia, in the past. So they were used to wearing masks, and they took things very seriously. One of the other things that I was doing, because one of the, I don't know if it's a myth, but one of the stories out there about COVID early on was that it came from bats. And so
right.
if you'll remember, we had these coins, a lot of our quarters, right, had I don't know, national preservation type things, but there was a ugly bat on the 2020 coin that I was like, this is so ugly, it's probably going to mean something someday. And if I challenge everybody, find a bat quarter and keep them, but they're not a lot of them. So,
wow.
You know, we'll see what history has to say about it, but I don't think it was a coincidence.
Wow, that is so interesting. Now, I'll tell you, at that beginning stage, and that was the last time I had taken a New York City subway in my neck of the woods, because then they rolled out with information was just flying fast and loose. We didn't quite know what to believe. We didn't quite know what to anticipate with the pandemic. So as this whole look back at 2021, this year in review, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show, we're going to be delving in. Almost every topic has some connection to the pandemic. So we're going to move forward with some of these other wonderful things to look back at, some a little sad, but, you know, some great memories also. And Mary Reed Johnson, I want to say, just even on a political front, since we kind of were talking and introduced, you know, mentioned Donald Trump and Joe Biden and all this, you have to be under a rock if you don't recall. Like, it was the early part of January, like around January 6th, I believe, was the date when that insurrection happened. And that
Absolutely.
Is on the Capitol, and which shocked everybody. I was glued to my TV, and we were broadcasting, I believe, on Hair Radio about this. This went on, and it just made huge news. It was just, you couldn't believe what your
yes,
eyes
watching
were
it
showing
unfold.
You.
Yes, watching it unfold, a lot of people had that same kind of surreal thing and question. It's like, where are the National Guards? Where's our
mm-hmm.
helpers? Is that our, you know, is that our capital under attack? And is this for real? And what, you know, all those questions. But it was real.
It was real. You hit it on the head. And but if the occurrence, if you guys recall out there, it was not so much a surprise. You could tell the way it appeared that the former president and all those folks were kind of, you know, allegedly what it seemed to be was that they were kind of goading these folks on. And unless if you're going to hide and hide it and, you know, be in denial, but it was very clear that these folks were under the impression that they were going to meet Donald Trump at the Capitol building. And so this whole thing where they were there and he was not, and they began to, you know, it was unruly. Thank the Lord that, you know, sadly we had folks who've lost their lives, a few of them tied into this. But it could have been so much worse. It could have been worse because these folks were under the impression, you know, false impression that, that our politicians, that was the target of all of this vitriol and hate and all this kind of stuff. And so they acted out this. And thank goodness for the efforts of that wonderful black man who was the guard, the police yes. officer who led them in a different direction.
Absolutely.
He led them away from where they were hiding. And that
they were
saved
so
their lives.
Intent. Yes, they were so intent with their hate. You could even see the pause. It's like, well, we're supposed to go in the other direction, but they were so intent on lynching the person that they followed them anyway because they were angry and they wanted to. And you know, also there was no thought that they would ever have to be held accountable or you know accept responsibility for some really bad things.
That's right. And we didn't even get to that part, but that's absolutely right. The thing is, what I was going to say about that, yes, when the officer was leading them away into the opposite direction, it didn't occur to them once that they were going in the wrong direction and that was a ploy by the officers so that they wouldn't.
Oh,
would
I
not,
think they
you know,
did because if you look at
mob.
That look. Yeah, look at that footage again, because there was just a second pause of the one who was like right behind the officer, who looked in the other direction, like we're supposed to go that way. But he again, that hate drove him to like follow this officer so they could, you know, cause him harm. And yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, don't know. I think that could be the case. I'm not disagreeing with that. My thing is that, like you say, I totally agree. I think they were so hate-filled that they could not think clearly and their judgment and all of that. So that officer,
yep.
He literally had them to follow him, and he led all of them, literally like it was the Pied Piper, away
yep.
from those. Now, this is why that is so significant for you guys out there, in case you probably didn't realize this. But had those folks, remember Mike Pence was there, there in that room, all those, because if you recall, the president had seemingly been pressuring Mike Pence to overturn, to not accept the results. That was the key.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yep.
Mike Pence had to really go and not accept and do the right thing, which is to follow the Constitution. And Mike Pence did not have the authority to really overturn anything. So, apparently, you know, Trump did not want him to even acknowledge, you know, the results, which would have thrown things in
correct.
Chaos. And that's all that what it seemed to me is that the former administration was just trying to throw things in chaos. And had those folks who were going to open up and destroy all of that by storming the Capitol, had they been able to get away with it and got awful, you know, thank God no harm was
we
to
might
Nancy
be in,
Pelosi
I
and
mean,
all these
it'd
people.
Be equivalent. Absolutely,
not,
it could be equivalent
might,
to being in any dictatorship country. Yes.
Well, not mighta and coulda woulda. We absolutely would have been a subject to a lengthier former administration. So Donald Trump would have still been able to. There wouldn't have been an election for Biden coming in. This is
nope.
what is amazing that that. In my opinion, and I'm speaking myself, that if this man, if Mr. The former administration, let's just say that, had gotten away, so to speak, with really getting these folks riled up so much that they would have caused that, our world would be very different right now, and that it just seemed to me that some people don't care at what at the lives that would have been lost. They're so selfish in their goals and what they're trying to get. Just have their own way. No matter how illegal and how awful and immoral, they didn't care because
people
what would have happened? They would have remained in power.
Yes, people want to believe what they want to believe. They can't put it on anybody in the end but themselves. And it's unfortunate, but the good thing is they didn't overthrow the government that time. They didn't take over democracy, and people need to appreciate what, even if it's not perfect, what this family is and or can be. Trust, if you travel at all, you see some things. And you're like, well, America's not perfect, but it sure could be. And thank goodness it's not. But we still are
Absolutely.
Not done yet. And by the way, even if you have a wonderful life and, no harmful stains going on, it doesn't mean it'll stay that way. So you always have to be aware, and you always want to do whatever you can do, whoever you can influence, to bring about positive change or at least increase awareness of some positive standards there. And my thoughts might be different, but, I think you can look at certain regimes and know that they're not good for women, or certain regimes and know that they don't like anybody who is not like them. And that's unhealthy at any level.
Absolutely. Well, that has all been exacerbated by, again, a culture. We have begun to accept this whole, you know, rage that seems to be building out here in America, and it's been going on for hundreds of years. Well, let me tell you, looking back at 2021, folks, if you're just kind of tuning in to the Hair Radio Morning Show, if you're just joining us, I'm Carrie Hines, and with me on the line is Mary Reed Johnson. You guys know her of Hair Head Heart. And we're taking a good look at 21. We're also looking ahead at 2022, some of the biggest stories that happened in this past year and why it's so important for us to take this look. I do it every year, Mary, as you guys know, out there. We take a look back because it allows us things in the right perspective. We can kind of, you know, look forward and kind of know exactly what action we need to take and all that wonderful mm-hmm. stuff. You know, that's how I kind of do it. Do you have a ritual that you do at the end and the beginning of each year?
Well, I think I've been reviewing just things more often than I typically do. And that's not a bad thing. And so I'm embracing change. Yeah, I'm embracing change. I'm always encouraging just people, myself and people around me, to stretch. And if you've never stretched, or you've always been putting off things, or you think you don't have enough money or enough this, I would say poppycock. This is the best time ever, best opportunities we've had in, you know, 1,000 years, whatever, to stretch. So I'd say make sure right now stretch. As far as traditions for my family, we are pretty diverse as far as what we like, but, you know, our bonds are very strong, and so that, you know, continues. I have 2 grown daughters, and each is amazing, fabulous, and, you know, very successful in their own right. So, you know, encouraging them to keep growing, and I'm going to keep growing even at this age. You can never stop, especially with the new opportunities that are presenting themselves. So if you get that extra stimulus check or that extra little piece of cash, do something with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what I want to kind of jump in on as well. Speaking of 2021 and at the beginning of 2021, and there was that whole stimulus check, which I think would have been about the second payment, if I'm not mistaken. So, and I think $600 was issued out, if I recall correctly. I don't remember how much it was, Mary.
There were different amounts for different stories. About $300 each month, and that
but
is ongoing.
But it was never enough, though.
Ends.
No, but
well,
the I think
something is
check.
Better than nothing. These people, I mean, the moratorium that they had on housing, that was helpful. The $1,500 or $1,200 to help you, you know, kind of get through whatever until unemployment kicked in, helpful. For some people who are gig workers or contract workers, we weren't even in categories that had been monitored enough that we would get unemployment, right? So all that CARES Act stuff was really helpful. Some small businesses, and unfortunately not a big businesses who already had a lot of money, were able to get stipends to help them through. And so it was really a holistic approach to keeping us afloat as a country. So I won't say that
I agree with you in theory, but when I look back and I remember this, I think what the whole thing was is that the payments and the way that they had divvied it up Yes, the money, no one's going to say money's not helpful. It is, and it's always on time whenever it does arise. But the thing is, I think it certainly was not enough, period. It was not enough money.
Never enough.
I don't know. Right, well, I was about to say, I don't know anybody who would think that it actually was perfect and enough money for us. In fact, I seem even to remember one of the politicians when I think they gave us out, because they sent me money, I took it. But I think I think one of them was like, it was so low, and we had already been in the pandemic at that point for like 10 months or something. And I mean,
okay, think of your whole life. When have they ever given you money? Period.
Well, no, I understand and I totally agree with you. But the mm-hmm. issue here is that you got to remember, folks were unable to work. They wanted to encourage you to stay home. Other countries took the approach to give you, because if they gave you the money on a regular basis and give you money each month, you would have been more inclined to stay home, which would have cut down on the transmission potentiality, and it would have ultimately had a benefit to everybody's health. But they didn't look at it that way per se. So the little bit of money they were looking at, the reason that the money was issued, if you recall, was a stimulation to the economy.
Right.
Those
wasn't
are
about
the words
the
that they were talking
no,
about.
No.
It wasn't about
yeah.
trying to, in my opinion, trying to really say, oh, we need to do this to, you know, keep everybody going and da-da-da-da-da. It was more so
economy,
about stimulation of the economy.
Yeah, it absolutely was. But the thing is, we are the economy. We pay the taxes. We do this. We do that.
Right,
and if we
right.
can't move, then they...
Yeah, I...
So that's really...
Good point, Mary. Now, what about the vaccines? And I want to talk about this because then it was we started fighting about everything. Thank you, former administration in the White House, because what you have done is to make us look at our differences. We began to only focus on the differences. Don't get me wrong. The differences have always been there since the beginning mm-hmm. of time. But it wasn't the sole focus. And because of that, again, that word exacerbate, it has exacerbated everything. So when mm-hmm. I look back, yes, we got the stimulus monies. Those funds helped. They need to send another round, if you ask me, but that's my opinion. The vaccines were all over the news. Then we began fighting about the darn vaccines. And I remember because quite a few folks were reluctant about taking the vaccine, getting the approval of the vaccines, and where mm-hmm. do we stand now with the vaccines? And there are folks who now in certain cities and states where you can't even go into a restaurant and eat and sit down and eat without being fully vaccinated. And you have to provide proof or you will not be able to do that. So what do you say, Mary Reed Johnson? And I'll tell you what is going on out here in New York City. Now, Mary's out in the Minnesota area generally. So what do you say, Mary?
Oh, I think it's messy by design.
Yes.
So people have to just be logical. I mean, that might be asking too much, but people want to believe what they want to believe. They want to do what they want to do. But there are certain things called repercussions on your actions.
Right.
And then your actions are not necessarily individual. They are linked to certain things. So, for example, when people were dying with Philip Morris and the cigarette smoking and everything, yeah, it was cool. It was popular, blah, blah, blah. But they realized that smokers were infecting other people. Secondhand smoke was killing more people than the people who were actually doing the smoking. So it's, you know, that kind of scenario.
Well, I wouldn't say it was
around.
Killing more than but it certainly, yeah. they showed that. Well, listen, it goes deeper than that as well because there was all kind of things that have been Yeah, there's a whole bunch. It goes so deep. That
public
really
health,
is very interesting.
Yeah, public health concerns are just that, public health concerns. People didn't used to want to wear seatbelts. People don't still want to not, what do you call it, text and drive. But these are problems. And the individual, I mean, they are as responsible as, you know, one person to the next person. So we just have to get there. And so
I agree. Well, good way to look at it, Mary. Yes, I agree. Now, I'll say on the vaccine front, and I myself was a bit reluctant at first because, you know, there's a lot of talk surrounding that people are still reluctant, even as we, you know, go to air at this time. There are folks who are reluctant to get the vaccine. See, my thing is this. There are folks, I understand the reluctancy of folks in this country. The interesting part is that there are folks who are reluctant for different reasons. There are lots of reluctancy, but almost all of us have different reasons for being a bit reluctant. Now, I have to say, I went ahead and got my vaccination. So when I do events and things like that we'll talk about, I wanted to make sure that I was in good health to do so and to make sure that I was keeping myself safe and the folks around me. So I went ahead, and I believe in science. That wasn't the reason for my reluctancy. My reluctancy is because of the awful history we have in this country as folks of color and being used for all kinds of, tests and this and that and being in, right, experiment is a better word, and being infected and all of these things that you're supposed to just pretend didn't happen. And when someone says to me, if they, you know, the folks who did these things say, listen, the sky is blue, I would literally open up my window and look out to make sure. I totally understand that. Yes, Mary,
absolutely.
Go right ahead.
Along those lines, Carrie, think about, so the number 45 who was saying, oh, you don't need this and drink some bleach and, you know, whatever. He didn't drink bleach when he got COVID, right?
No.
He went to the
and
medical
I remember
facility
that. Do you
yeah.
That's right. Do you remember when
so
he
like,
was
it's
standing
good for me
up there?
You all don't need it.
Right. Well, I remember the news conference where he was standing up there. And his doctor, one of the supposed physician, you know, she was in the background sitting down. And when he said, they showed her face when he mentioned about the bleach, he said later that he was just kidding. In fairness, we'll say he said he was just kidding. But she was in total consternation. She was like in shock that those words came out of his mouth. She later said this, so it's not like we're putting words in anybody's mouth. She released, I believe she did a book and she talked about it later. But let me tell you, just very interesting. Now, as far as the vaccines go, I believe that we have definitely turned a big point, a corner with all of this. And in 2022, this, I believe that they're going to pretty much put this to bed. So I'm grateful of that. I think this this whole pandemic thing seemed to, has lasted so much longer than we had thought. You know, we just, like the former administration said, it'll just one day disappear. You know, you wake up and poof. And so that was the thinking that they had. And so we've come a long way with folks, getting these vaccines. Right now, there's still the three major vaccines. They're now coming out with all kinds of pills and things to ward off serious infection and so much more. And they have children things and all this kind of stuff. So we're definitely turning the corner with the vaccines. Now, speaking of which, Mary, you mentioned something right before we went on air today, and that is talking about the hair and beauty industry. We have to work in them in this conversation. We really do. So, just to kind of go back a bit for folks who are just tuning in, I'm Carrie Hines. I'm with Mary Reed Johnson. And today We're taking a look back at 2021. It's our annual year-end review on the Hair Radio Morning Show. And just kind of, if you're really just joining us, you might have missed our lead-in this morning. We kicked off with the amazing singer that we actually lost this year. And it was a wonderful, wonderful song called A Lovely Day. And Bill Withers is the artist. And just how could you not just have fond thoughts and memories, Mary Reed Johnson, with A Lovely Day kicking off this whole episode. And we're going to be playing
that
some of the music from
choice.
Some of the folks that we lost. Was that not? Now, just to take a moment, because you guys know we're going to be getting in and out and talking about this. Almost everything that we talk about has been traced back or can be tracked back to a pandemic in some way. So there's a lot to get into, and we're going to get in and delve on in. But the hair salons, this was one subject that I was able to really delve into on the Hair Radio Morning Show. And the one thing I have to say, and even before we get into that part, Mary, it was with the pandemic, there were lots of pluses and benefits, if you will, even though this was a very negative, sad story overall. But there were some wonderful things that were born out of this. Did you have any positive experiences that came out of the pandemic, Mary Reed Johnson?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Again, it was just a wonderful time to reflect. Even when the shops closed and reopened and closed again, even for me deciding who really was a worthwhile client, you know, this type of thing. Fortunately for me, most of them were very loyal and, you know, encouraging and, you know, this type of thing. It was nice to have the industry recognized as an industry and I mean, literally the gig workers and the contract workers, that is the bulk of the industry. I don't know if it's 62 or 82%, but the bulk. And so having them look at the big picture and what they might need or want. I had gap insurance when this first happened, and the gap insurance was anything ever happened. You know, if I couldn't perform whatever way or whatever reason, my gap insurance, in addition to the other things I had, was supposed to kick in. It did not. So exposed a lot of problems with the insurance industry and coverages and, you know, that type of thing. Not just me, but just worldwide.
That's amazing.
And so I think that's positive, because anytime you learn from an experience, that's a good thing. So choosing where you want to practice, how you want to practice, expanding your practice, offering classes on, you know, these types of things were not necessary before, but once it became an option, or you were aware of the option, you explored it, and I think it bodes well for the industry. Just so, well, I mean, there's a lot. And so,
yeah, there is. Yeah.
Just to start to unpack some of those things is important.
Absolutely. Well, I agree with you, Mary. Now, for me and the Hair Radio Morning Show, there was a huge boon in the broadcasting for me. And I could tell you quite personally, during the height of the pandemic, when things were shut down, and here in New York City, it was a virtual ghost town. Nothing was moving. The trains had stopped. People were walking. There was just nothing going on. And everybody was in the house by like 8 or 9 o'clock. As soon as night fell, that was it. You were definitely not outside. And so I remember this. And what was absolutely amazing to me is that because you were home, there were things that we didn't anticipate a few years back, and that would be that folks were looking for things to do inside their homes. They didn't even know who some of their spouses were because they had never gotten to spend that much time with them. they had to be reminded of their kids' names. You know,
oh my goodness.
They had not.
May I share
well,
with you one of
absolutely.
The comedians named Jim Gaffigan. He has five
yes,
children.
Yes, I know who Jim
he
is.
Talk
he's
about
on,
him.
Yeah, he's on 60 Minutes, I
on
think.
CBS
he was on
CBS Sunday Morning and just kind of
right.
everywhere. But he yeah. made a big thing of, like, discovering these five children and realizing that they were there to stay and that he would have to interact
I
with them.
You know, I actually saw that, yes. I was a fan of his, so I saw that. Yeah, you're right. He was on CBS, Sunday CBS Morning News and 60 Minutes and all that stuff on CBS. But, yeah, we had
forever,
to become
forever,
familiarized.
Ever?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. I love that. We had to become refamiliarized with a lot of that. And as such for us at Hair Radio, folks were discovering the broadcast. So we have a lot of listeners from all
Yay.
Over the world, and we welcome you. We love you. We thank you for being a part of our experience. But we were able to be introduced to a lot of folks because of the pandemic that we probably wouldn't have had a chance to meet so soon. So we are grateful on that level for being able to do that. And speaking of the Hair Radio Morning Show, we had a lot of folks who literally joined us in 2021 for the very first time and got to be part, thrust right in the middle of some of the biggest news stories about hair and beauty in the world. And so we're going to talk about that. And I've got to first say, like some of those hair salons that were open, were closed for a little bit, some states, depending on where you were almost like they didn't close at all. I think if I recall correctly, Georgia had pretty much opened right back up. Maybe 2 weeks if you want to say close. I think they gave it a week or two. The pandemic did come and go. And then they were right back open. Georgia
like,
was
I
one of the
money.
First states. Georgia, did, they were like, we are opening back up, honey. You're going to have to mask up, but we don't really care what you do, but we're opening back up. And I'm just exaggerating a bit, but let me tell you, I think one of the interesting interviews that we did was with the folks at Barbicide. The folks at Barbicide. So we had, Mary, I want to get this lady on. Her name is Nurse Leslie, and she talked to us at that time. Again, this was during the pandemic. We have it firsthand. And then we're going to get to the biggest news story, the very biggest news story, in one of the biggest news stories in the country, if not the world, but particularly in our industry. And we'll tell you what that is.
Oh, let me guess.
In the show. Oh, no, not yet. We're gonna tease it for just a tad or two as we move into the next hour on our look back at 2021. I'm Carrie Hines with Mary Reed Johnson. We're going to have you guys to stay with us. And then as we come back, we're going to delve on in with Nurse Leslie of Barbicide and kind of give us a little bit. It'll help us to kind of understand when we're listening to this broadcast, this replay with Nurse Leslie of where we were at that time. And then, like I said, we've got some big things to touch on in this look back. So I'm super excited. So we want you guys to stay with us. We'll take a little bit of a commercial break as we move into the next hour. And again, I'm so grateful to have you with us. So stay tuned. We've got a lot more to get to this morning on the show.
Are you a stylist, barber, nail tech, or involved in personal care on any level? Are you good at what you do? I bet you are. And as being as good as you are, that leaves you less time to handle your clients. I mean, as far as booking appointments, product sales, pricing, and all that. Well, I have something that'll help you on that end and still allow you to be great. ChairWatch. It's a new mobile booking platform that allows your client direct access to you. It'll allow them to book, change, cancel appointments, place themselves on standby, buy products, and even be able to send you direct messages. And that is just a taste of all the services that ChairWatch provides. Sounds good? Then check it out at chairwatch.com
or you can download the app via the Apple Store or Google Play. ShareWatch, a new and better way to connect with your clients.
It's my honor, my absolute honor to welcome Nurse Leslie Rosti to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Leslie, Nurse Leslie, we're going to call you this morning. You're on the Hair Radio Morning Show with LaSonya Nicole and me, Carrie Hines. How are you? How are you, Nurse Leslie?
I'm good. How are you guys? I'm very honored to be on your show. So,
good morning. We're honored to have you.
I was looking at you guys before I got on, and you guys have a great thing going here, so I'm happy to be part of it.
Ah, thank you so much. Appreciate that. Listen, we've got to, I'm going to kill the background music here because we've got to jump right on in. There's so much going on these days. And, you know, Leslie, just tell us a little bit about Barbicide. Now, you're the ED, you're the education director for Barbicide. And this is, you know, known everywhere. Everybody knows Barbicide. But can you just, you know, for those few who may not be as familiar, what can you tell us about Barbicide and its importance right now?
So I came to Barbicide. I came to the company King Research that manufactured Barbicide about 11 years ago. As you already referenced, I'm a nurse. And came to the company not really sure what my message would be to this industry. And for the last 11 years, I have been out saying, you know, something like this is going to happen. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. It's going to happen. We've got to be prepared. And maybe some of your listeners have heard me at conventions or read from the textbooks that I've written for, or I may have come into some of your schools and taught classes to your students. And I've been preaching that, you know, we really need to be on top of our game when it comes to infection control. And it's unfortunate, something like COVID-19, to really get everyone to pay attention and to even have the consumer understand it almost as well as most of our licensees do, the difference between cleaning and disinfection, the importance of properly disinfecting things, even things like PPE. You know, if I said that to any consumer 6 months ago, they wouldn't have understood it, but they do today.
Exactly.
And so Barbicide, as the leading product in this industry that was really designed for the professional beauty industry as a disinfectant, in 1947, which is kind of shocking to me that the formula hasn't changed since 1947, and we've been effective against literally everything that has come. When HIV came, yes, we were effective against it. You know, and here we are with COVID-19, and yes, we're effective against it. So it's kind of amazing that a product designed in Brooklyn in 1947.
Brooklyn, of course, the best thing to come out of Brooklyn. Let me just say that.
You know, and today it's manufactured in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, of all places. But, you know, Barbicide is important because Barbicide was designed for this industry. When you talk about disinfectants, not all disinfectants are created the same. One of the things we're constantly being aware of is the fact that all of you have, for example, expensive shears, expensive equipment that you purchase that you don't want it to get ruined. So we're, as a company, we walk that line for you of disinfecting properly, but also allowing you to keep your, you know, nice, good equipment, your sharp shears, all of those things in good condition. So things like putting in rust inhibitors that you wouldn't find, for example, in bleach. So it is an important product in this industry right now. So now I will say this. We have been selling into healthcare, into hospitals. So about we sold into hospitals for a couple of weeks, sort of in the interim when everybody shut down and we were still making product. I feel proud to say that as a nurse that we did sell into healthcare for a while. But we will be ready when everybody's ready to go back to work. We're ready to, you know, to provide you with product.
Wonderful. Now, I've got to say, you also, the Barbicide, I happen to be on social media like all of our fans and show followers, and I saw the certification information on Barbicide.
Right.
Can you tell our listeners about that?
So about probably 7 years ago, I had an idea that I was going out to all of these schools, and I realized that for every school I could get to and do a presentation, there were 10 that wanted me to come, and I couldn't get there. So we developed this Barbicide certification originally for the schools, and it's free of charge. It takes about 40 minutes. You've probably done it. Maybe it doesn't even take that long.
Yes.
But it's really basic information. You know, one of the things I try to go out and remind when I go to a state government and try to help them revise their rules, or when I go and train inspectors in a state, when I go and speak to a big audience, I try to remind people this isn't rocket science. It's actually pretty simple. And I think some of the rules of some of our states and some of our textbooks even have made it more complicated than it needs to be. It's a pretty simple process to make your service as safe as possible. Using the right products and doing it correctly is really actually simple. So the Brotherhood certification is that simple knowledge that you need to do everything as safely as you can. And, yes, it was designed for students who are going through school, but what I've discovered through all of this is that it's a really good refresher for somebody. You know, maybe you got out of school 20 years ago, and you just want to make sure that you're doing the right thing. You know, now it's, things are so scary, you want to make sure that you're doing the right thing. So going back and taking this 40-minute class, it's free of charge. You get to print a certificate at the end of it that, you know, people are posting, hanging their certificates up and framing their certificates and all kinds of things. Because here's the other thing. You need a refresher, but you need to let your clients know that you did a refresher. Because afraid as you might be to go back to work, your clients are really afraid to come back into the barbershop or the salon. They are nervous. And so anything you can do to make them feel better about what you're doing and having a certificate posted says, I did this thing. I went and got this little extra reminder of, you know, what I already maybe already knew.
Now, Nurse Leslie, let me just, if you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines with my co-star and co-host, LaSonya Nicole, and our very special guest that you're listening to is Nurse Leslie. Now, she's the ED, the Education Director for Barberside, and we're so excited to have you on with us, talking about so many important things right now. I have to say, in preparation for the interview today, Nurse Leslie, we had a brief conversation. I really want you to kind of bring this point home about the disproportionate number of cases with regards to minorities and men of color. Can you just kind of share some of those stats and some of the information you were kind of introducing me to, which I found fascinating?
Well, I don't think it's any surprise to anyone, because if you live in a community of color, you've heard it already, right? You've heard in your community that first off, men in general are way more susceptible to dying from this than women, you know, across any type of ethnic group. But then when we start talking about men of color, that number skyrockets. And part of the reason for that, and the main reason from a nursing perspective that I can tell you for that, is that color and, traditionally are not the best, I will say this, about going to a doctor, let's say, for a regular checkup. Most of the time, I go to the doctor when I'm sick. And the problem with that approach to healthcare is that the two things that make somebody the most susceptible to this disease are hypertension or high blood pressure and diabetes, both of which have very, very silent symptoms. You know, you often hear them called the silent killer because your symptoms are so mild, you don't even feel them. So if you are that man, and you're having symptoms that you're not even recognizing as making you potentially diabetic or hypertensive, and you now get COVID-19, your likelihood of dying is much, much higher. So it's not because you're of color. It's not because of a community that you live in. It's because you have an underlying condition that you didn't know you had. That's really the generalized theory of why it's hitting disproportionately in those particular communities. Now, I will say, that's also increased if you live in a community where people live very close together. It's why New York City is having such a problem. I have a son that lives in New York City, and, you know, everybody lives on top of each other, literally on top of each other.
Literally, that's right.
You know, it's hard to socially distance when everybody lives so close together. It's why in the middle of the country, in the Midwest, I live in the Midwest, you don't see as many numbers. We don't live close together. We all, you know, we keep our distance from each other. That's how our normal lifestyle is. So you will see those numbers go down also or up disproportionately depending on how you live. So.
Wow. Well, I tell you, this is really just information that you can't really find out there so much, like with this particular discussion point, and I love this. Nurse Leslie, can you talk a little bit? One of the biggest reasons for having you on the show today is that when you turn on the news, you hear that the salons, well, first of all, you hear that the states are about to kind of open back up and start rolling out a way to kind of bring the country back up, if you will, economically speaking at least.
Right.
So they're trying to reopen the shops, reopen the states, reopen, get back to some sense of normalcy, if you will, some sense. So this is a real part of the conversation. The salons, the barbershops that are out there, what are your thoughts? And let me just also say this, Nurse Leslie. The governors around our country are calling you. They're calling you. They're consulting with you. Talk a little bit about that, and what kind of a plan do you think we need to take to consider? Yes, they're calling you. You're the go-to.
I'm only laughing because I think everybody has a misconception, perhaps, that there is some master plan that's going on. And I will tell you, the states are trying diligently to get a plan together. But, you know, no one's ever been here before. Like, we've never been in this space before. And there would not have been a way to have planned for this. I mean, we can get as mad as we want about whatever did or didn't happen up till today. But no one's ever been in this position of having to create a guideline for literally reopening their entire economy. Who goes first? Does a restaurant open first? Does a barbershop open first? What order do we open things in? And when we open them, what are the guidelines that we can put in place? And some states...
All right. And just like the Dick Clark Show that we all grew up on, I'm Carrie Hines. Join me for a very special edition of the Hair Radio Show. That's on Friday night, December 31st at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. We are counting down all the way to midnight. Now, we've got great memories. We've got great music. We've got some great guests in addition to some surprise visitors who'll be dropping by. So please tune in. Again, it's going to be all the way live. We're also going to live stream, so please join us. That's on Friday night into the Saturday morning, right here for our own midnight countdown. Again, it's going to be awesome. All right, we're back live. Yes, you are listening to the all-new Hair Radio Broadcast Network. I'm Carrie Hines. It is Tuesday morning. It's December 7th of 2021. And coming up in about 2 minutes, we have a very special episode today of Vet Talk Radio Show. You guys know it with Michael Hopkins. So we're going to have you guys just to kind of hang out and stay tuned and keep it right here. It's Pearl Harbor Day today, so that we'll cover. And Michael has a whole lot of other wonderful things that we'll get into. So we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. And just stay with us. We've got a lot to get to this morning.
As women, it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders. And that weight is directly balanced between your 2 feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women, and Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com, providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
It's two thumbs up. The Hair Radio Morning Show goes to the movies. It's our brand new Movie Talk radio segment. Listen live. Tune in right here on our broadcast for our unique review of the latest movie. Join us live on the air to chat. It's Movie Talk on the Hair Radio Morning Show. The Let Your Spirit Soar segment on the Hair Radio Morning Show is about getting your day and ours started with positive thoughts, well wishes, great quotes, and amazing affirmations. So if you have one you'd like to share, please send it through our Salon TV Network app, and we'll get it featured on the air. I'm Carrie Hines. You're invited to be part of our new limited radio broadcast series, Talking About Cosby. It's our chance to collectively delve into the life and career and legacy of Bill Cosby, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, we've got great on-air commentators who will be lending their voices to this complex man's story, and we want to hear from you. Our mid-show hour from 7 to 8 a.m. Eastern, 6 to 7 Central, it's your chance to call in and speak live on the air. Go to our Facebook page, The Hair Radio Morning Show, for complete details.
Up now, live, it's Vet Talk Radio Show with host Michael Hopkins, executive producer Carrie Hines, and Michael's Angels panel, Nicole, Noor, and Katrina. The Vet Talk Radio Show with Michael Hopkins is all about helping veterans in need. Stay tuned.
All right. We're bringing to the line the one and only Mr. Michael Hopkins. Good morning, Michael, and welcome again to Vet Talk Radio Show, folks.
Good morning. Good morning and good morning.
Yes. Well, if it's Tuesday morning at 8:30 Eastern Time, 7:30 Central, it's time for an all-new edition of Vet Talk, and I'm Carrie Hines. It's so great to have you with us, of course. And Michael, I have to turn to you, sir, the one and only Mr. Michael Hopkins. Today, I know it's we're honoring Pearl Harbor Day, so to speak. So I wanted to kind of turn it on over to you. I know you have a few things to get to this morning, and I've got a few announcements a little later in today's broadcast. Also, just taking a quick moment before I turn it over to you, Michael, we want to just shout out to your amazing lineup of your Michael's Angels this morning. Of course, can't start the show without them as well. So here you go, Michael Hopkins, take it away.
Right. Well, as we all know, Carrie, today is Pearl Harbor Day. It's actually called National Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day. That's what it's really known as. And this is the 80th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. And on December 7th, 1940, these Navy attacked our forces at Pearl Harbor, taking the lives of 2,403 service members, to include 1,177 crew members who lost their lives on the USS Arizona. And it's actually a memorial, and a lot of us have seen it, that it stands to this day of the USS Arizona. It was a direct hit from a Japanese bomber that blew a hole in it, blew the ship up, and sank it, and it's been there ever since. And, Carrie, it's just, we weren't going to go to World War II as America. We were a neutral country at that time. And there had been tensions between the U.S. and Japan because the Japanese were in the expansion mode. They were all over Asia. They were in China. And what they were doing at the time, they were uniting all of the Asiatic people. That's what the whole premise was of the Japanese. And what we were doing, we were giving them scrap material. We were doing all kinds of economics. And unfortunately and regrettably, it came down to we didn't like their policies or what they were doing in China at the time. So we did boycotts. Well, the Japanese didn't like that, obviously. So what they wound up doing is they planned this attack on Pearl Harbor. They looked and they wanted to see what's the best place. And all they wanted to do was to bring the United States to negotiation table economically. That's all this was. And Admiral Yamamoto, he was one of the architects of the plan. He had studied in America. He'd studied at some of the universities in America, and he understood how Americans thought. One thing led to another, and the die was cast in what the Japanese did. They sailed from Japan about 600 miles to Pearl Harbor. They had
six carriers, aircraft carriers, and this was the first time in history that 400 planes took off from six carriers and attacked Pearl Harbor. It was early in the morning on December 7th, and everybody, it was a Sunday. So we know what a lot of people do on a Sunday. You wake up, you go to church, or a lot of people will wind up they're sleeping in. You know, it's military people, and they were used to airplanes. This was at Pearl Harbor. The airfield on Fort Island is right there, so it was no big deal to see a bunch of planes fly over. But the kicker was all of a sudden the planes are dropping bombs. And we hadn't been in a war since World War One. So most of the guys, they were young guys, 18, 20-year-olds. They're young guys, and they'd never been in a war before. So what happens? They see all this going on, so everybody thinks this is a drill. And they're looking at this like, oh, these Army guys are in trouble. They're dropping real bombs. And all of a sudden, people were looking at it like, wait a minute, this is not a drill. And they had to keep saying that over the PA systems all throughout the harbor and everything. It was called Battleship Bro, and that's where six of our battleships, they were just there lined up. And it was a theory. The theory was we knew the Japanese were going to do something. We just didn't know when, but President Roosevelt sent from the Atlantic Fleet, he sent all these battleships to the Pacific. Hawaii at that time was a beautiful place. I mean, like it is now, but back then it was an exotic place. It was a territory of the United States. It wasn't a state yet. And it was an exotic place. And, you know, we're young guys. There's a bunch of pretty women. And so it was like lazy hazy. Nobody's thinking. And the next thing you know, all hell breaks loose. So everybody had to function. And that's
well, Michael, I have to jump in and say I thank you for this. I want to just remind everybody that we lost about 2,400 lives that day. And it's something that that America, that we cannot forget, and we certainly don't forget here at this radio network. But I just have to say thank you, because it's been 80 years, but we should never forget. We should never forget. So I thank you for this, and this will be our definitely at the forefront of our minds today on your broadcast. Now, Michael, I want to turn to something that I know you have been very instrumental about, and that is what you're covering today, which is your main topic that that I know that you want to get to. But first, I want to remind everybody, we need to welcome all of your amazing fans to the show. I see a ton of folks who are all lined up and raring to go this morning. And so I want to make sure and welcome all those folks. And remember that you can press 1 to talk if you've got something to say. And also want to talk a little bit about what this amazing big topic that you are going to be discussing today. And remind everybody, it's all there at HAIRadio.com on a website, so they can always see what's coming up on that talk radio show there on your wonderful new fan page. It's a big tab at the top that is the Vet Talk Radio Show fan page at www.HAIRadio.com. Michael, so what exactly is this new program? I'm going to let you tell everybody a little bit. Please tell us a little bit about what you've prepared this morning.
Oh, yeah. Okay. What I did, I did some research on a program that a lot of veterans really don't know about. And the program is called the Program of Comprehensive Assistance for Family Caregivers. And, of course, it has an acronym, PCAFC. And basically,
wow,
what the project or the program, rather, is all about, there are veterans out here that need assistance. They need help. And the help comes in the form of a family caregiver. That's what the help comes in. And a lot of times, us as veterans, we need help. We need help with just easy things that we can no longer do or it's hard for us to do. Sometimes, Carrie, it's hard for us to go on appointments to the Veterans Hospital. Sometimes it's hard for us to dress ourselves, to bathe ourselves, and even to feed ourselves. It's very hard. And there are a lot of veterans out there that they're suffering with this, and they have no idea that they can formally appoint one of their family members as their caregiver. They can formally appoint someone in their family as a caregiver. And that person can be responsible for them, taking care of them. You know, a lot of times it already happens, but it's not being recognized by the VA.
And well, Michael, in the old days, yes, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just going to say, in the old days, didn't they have it where folks, like, there would be pretty much strangers assigned to take care of you? So this program allows for familiarity, allows for the wounded and those suffering to have, you know, maybe it could even aid with their healing. It might speed up all of that to have somebody that they're close to and recognizable. And hopefully, you know, you're going to pick somebody, obviously, who cares about you. So I think that's remarkable. Good stuff, Michael. Wow.
Right. Yeah, it is such a great program. And just to give you, Karen, to give our fans some highlights of this program.
Yes, please.
Just some of the eligibility requirements for the family caregiver. The person has to be at least 18 years old, at least 18. That's the minimum.
Okay.
Also, it can be a spouse, son, daughter, parent, step family member, extended family member of the veteran.
Wow.
Or, check this out, it can be someone who lives full-time with the veteran or is willing to do so if they're designated as a family caregiver. And as I said, Carrie, a lot of veterans don't know that. They don't know that they can designate somebody formally so that the VA healthcare system recognizes this person as your advocate. They recognize this person. And that's
I like that
need.
Word, advocate, yes.
Right.
Awesome.
You need somebody to advocate for you as a veteran. Sometimes as veterans, we can't advocate for ourselves because it's difficult, it's painful. There's a lot of things that you go through as a disabled veteran. And you need somebody to advocate for you, to speak up for you, to make the medical community understand your suffering and your pain. You need somebody like that. We're just fooling ourselves as veterans if we don't care.
I have to say, yes, this is amazing. And just to remind everybody, your fans who are tuned in, that you've put up a link. There is an actual link at hairradio.com, and you can go there, click on the Vet Talk Radio fan page, and it will you can see all the information there about what's coming up on today's show, a whole bunch of wonderful things all about Vet Talk Radio show. But one of my favorite things there, yes, you have the link. It'll take you over to the VA official website, and I love that, with the details about this program, about this amazing program. So again, but hairradio.com, let me make sure all of your fans are aware that it is spelled with one R. So it's hairradio.com. So it's www.hairradio.com.
HAIRadio.com. It's pronounced Hair Radio, but it has one R in the middle. So there you'll see a Vet Talk Radio Show tab, fan page, right at the top. So, Michael, wow. So, okay, so back to this. This is, and I have to say, this program name, now it is a little bit of a mouthful, the Program of Comprehensive Assistance, I think you said, for Family Caregivers. But it seems very important.
Right. Yeah. It's a typical government program. They have coordinators in the hospitals. They have all kinds of things for veterans. And yet,
wow,
a lot of us do not know about this, Carrie. I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? There are all these programs.
Sure. Why is that, Michael? How come things are so, like, not, you know, it doesn't seem to be out there as much as maybe it should be? Or what, you know, why is that the case so much, or so it seems?
Well, it is sad, as, you know, basically it's sad, but a lot of times what happens, there's so much information for veterans, and we get kind of bombarded with it, and we do more what somebody else said type deal. You know, because Harry, the veteran, said, oh, man, that program's no good, you shouldn't do it. We don't go do it. We don't go investigate. It's like in the claims process. We don't do certain things. And unfortunately, what a lot of the vets don't understand, these programs are set aside every year by Congress and Senate. They're mandated.
So
and
maybe there's a lot more help out there than we know.
And your right care is getting better now. The information has always been there, but it's getting better now. The VA hospital or the healthcare system is starting to get better at disseminating information to veterans. They're getting a lot better at it. You know, they're coming up to speed with the modern technology now, with the websites and information, and they have their television channel you can look at, and Zooms, and there are all kinds of things going on with veterans now that did not happen 30, 40 years ago.
Wow.
Now it's much better because of the modern technology. But, you know, Carrie, we still have a long way to go with the VA healthcare system, the compensation system, the whole 9 yards. We still have a long way to go. And I just thank God that the VA is finally understanding what we have to do as veterans, what we need, what we desire. And I'm just so grateful that they're starting to understand it, just like a lot of our politicians. A lot of them are veterans. So they understand. They served in the military. Some of them use the VA hospital. Some of them are retired military. So they understand, just like a lot of the veterans organizations out here are very strong advocates for veterans. And that's one of the things I love about a lot of these veterans organizations. What they've done is they've advocated so much for veterans till they've had Congress and Senate pass bills just for veterans, because they know what we go through as veterans. They know what it's like to be a veteran. And you have all this red tape and all this
bureaucracy
that we
have call
to go
it out
to.
In the regular world. Sure.
Okay, the other world, yeah, bureaucracy. But, you know,
yes,
us as veterans, we just call it a bunch of crap.
You know, oh, but, Michael. Wow. Well, listen, I am just like the fans of the show, and I just want to take a moment to call out. You have some amazing folks who are all listening to the broadcast. And just to remind everybody and bring everybody up to speed, we're live this morning on the Vet Talk Radio Show. It's your episode, Michael, number 17. There's
16 other broadcasts of the Vet Talk Radio Show that you've done. And I just want to let folks know a quick couple of program notes. Coming up, we're going back to our big 24-hour network, and we'll be bringing you up to speed on that, and Vet Talk Radio Show will be expanding on that network. So a lot more information to come. We'll be talking about that in the coming weeks. And also, we're hoping that you'll join us at midnight, a little before midnight, we're about 10 o'clock in the evening on New Year's Eve. Michael, we are doing a big New Year's Eve party on radio, on our Hair Radio Network, at starting at 10 o'clock on New Year's Eve night. So we're on at nighttime. And the entire Vet Talk Radio Show cast will be there. So you guys are going to help me to celebrate and bring in the new year. We're going to bring it in together on air live that night. So we'll be literally counting the time, you know, counting the seconds down to midnight. And we are so excited, kind of like the old Dick Clark show. It's going to be great to have the Vet Talk Show there.
Oh, yeah. You and I remember that very well, Dick Clark.
Yes.
WFIL back in Philly, back in the day.
Yes. That's right. Our home. That's right. Listen, so I want to remind all of you guys who are listening, please feel free. You can join us by dialing the same 516 number to listen in to the New Year's Eve special broadcast. Again, we're going to be on live from 10 o'clock that night till about 12:30 in the morning, out of New York time, that is, and we will be counting down. We got special guests, we got music, we got great talk. The whole Vet Talk cast will be there, so I just wanted to get that on out. Michael, we're so excited, you know, during this holiday time, and I think we're going to have a special New Year's Eve. We've done it before. We've done it on the show before, and it's always exciting. And we're going to talk about all kinds of things, and so lots of wonderful things to talk about. Now, Michael, I wanted to kind of turn over as well to your claims talk. You mentioned it a little while ago, some of the wonderful feedback that you got, and I know you got, about the amazing show that aired last week on, you know, choosing how to go about filing the claims and all that and not getting taken advantage of and all of that wonderful good stuff. And I was hoping we could bring in the angels that could help you share with our amazing fans the wonderful things that that came out of last week's episode. What do you think?
Hey, sounds like a plan to me, Karen. Yes, sir. Let's bring it on.
All right. Nicole, Noor, and Katrina. So, again, we just to remind everybody, we've got Nicole, we've got Noor, we've got Katrina, Michael's angels. You guys all heard, first of all, welcome again and good morning. Welcome to today's broadcast, Michael's angels.
Good morning. Good morning.
All right, good. Yes. Good morning. Good morning. Okay, so I want to kind of jump on in and ask you guys, and whoever wants to answer first is great. What were some of the thoughts? What happened on last week's show? Everybody was talking about the broadcast. Was it the subject about the claims? Noor Jahan, would you like to kind of lead us off with anything you want to say about that?
Sure. So the last episode, we were talking about who can represent you as a veteran. And the things that we were talking about is you have to be accredited, you know, and there's different services. And the person, you know, must take in order to represent. They have to have a test that's going to be representing these veterans. And so it was very, very informative, to say the least.
To say the least,
there's no
that.
Fee involved, but some people actually try to charge a vet for something that is actually free, and that was one of my biggest takeaways.
I think that was I think that's what kind of resonated with everybody. That you really hit it on the head, and I think you articulated that very well. That was something big. And then Nicole chimed in towards the end of the last week's show with something that was very pertinent and
kind of personal. Nicole, do you remember coming in at the last part of the broadcast and sharing some of the things? Let's tell everybody, remind the folks, and just to tell everybody what that was about.
Yes, what I was stating was, well, on the topic last week, as Nurse said, she hit one, the accredited agents. There were the lawyers and then the veteran service organizations. And as Michael had stated, for those veteran service organizations, there is no fee. It is free for veterans that are trying to file a claim. And as I was stating, over the years, there have been organizations that have claimed to represent veterans in their claims, but they have wanted to charge a fee. So that was very key for me and stood out and very important in just letting people know that it is free. You do not have to pay for this because the information out there is free and the services from these organizations are free.
Amazing. I'm just glad that we have this show with you guys and Michael Hopkins, who was, again, the brain, what do they call it, like, you know, the man, the person who brought it to us and created this. So we are so excited. Katrina, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
So what are your thoughts, Katrina, on, good morning to you, on last week's, you know, all that information? We were throwing a lot out about this whole thing. Did you have anything you want to comment about it?
I mean, I agree with what both there and Nicole said. I was just, like, shocked and amazed because I have heard some veterans say that they were going to have to either get them a lawyer or pay someone to even help them. And to hear last week's show that this is free, that you don't even have to pay anyone to help you.
Not necessarily, exactly. Yeah.
Well,
out of Paris, exactly, out of Paris, Texas, Katrina, thank you so much for that. Michael Hopkins, so these are your angels. They're helping you to pull all this together. What else is going on? What else is next for you, Michael, over the weeks to come? Is this going to be a subject that you can revisit because it seems to be something really important and has struck a nerve, really?
Oh, yes, definitely, Carrie. We had so many people contact us and just explain to us how somebody was trying to charge them. I had one of my brothers, they were trying to charge him $10,000 to help him.
Wow.
And it's just, some people try to charge you 6 months worth of your back pay if you get retro pay or back pay. I mean, it's just, and it has to be stopped. And also,
well,
Carrie,
well, those folks, yes, go right ahead. I was just going to say, they're not going to like that you've got the vet talk show. Then.
They're not. I'm also working on, with the Angels, we're working on another show, and that show is going to be about what are the signs of people that are trying to charge you for this. We're going to
just wrap it up, though, so that we can remind everybody. Listen, folks, go to HAIRadio.com. Michael, we'll put all that information what Michael was just talking about there, and we'll see you guys next Tuesday at 8:30 in the morning. Michael, you've got a birthday shout-out, too. Whose birthday is it?
Oh, yeah. Rather quickly here, we're going to shout-out to our number one fan, and that is Mr. Larry Hilton. Happy birthday, Larry.
Happy birthday, Larry. All right, folks. We'll see you back here next week for the next installment. Just thank you so much for being a fan of the Vet Talk Radio Show. Great job, Michael. Great job, Angels. And thanks to all the fans of the show.